From Market to Market, the weekly journal of rural America, and the studios of Iowa PBS in scenic Johnston, Iowa, it is time for the MTOM podcast. Today, from Iowa's wild weather, producer John Torpy, featuring listener comments. Rate and review where you get your podcast. And I'm booth announcer John Scoop Brooker. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Paul Yeager.
I'm not even sure where to look when we start with. We just put all these cameras in here, John.
I know.
Welcome to my, what'd you just call it, janitorial closet?
Well, it had a little bit of that feel to it.
Yeah, so I teased last week that we've got this whole renovation coming to the podcast room. We're still a work in progress. I mean, I've got stuff stacked everywhere. Going to put in some lighting, so we're going with more of mood lighting. You okay with that?
Yeah, I think that's going to work. Are you going to go 220?
Probably.
Yeah. 221, whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes. I've got some boxes that are in process, and we will get those soon. So then we're coming out of the Zoom era where a lot of these things can be done via Zoom, and I'm still going to keep doing that. That's not changing anywhere because it's allowed us to go to Oregon and Washington and Vermont without leaving my basement.
It really has kind of changed how we work.
Yeah.
You know, I was able to get to know a lot of people in Washington pretty quick. As a photographer, do I like how Zoom looks? Absolutely not.
No, it does have its look. So, but we're trying. This is similar to my golf cart conversation I did at the fair.
That was so cool.
Rinky dink with three, you know, cameras. So John looks really good. I'm looking at him right now. So we are going to be doing a couple of things today. One is we will talk to John about his upcoming. By this time it airs, we'll have. You've seen it on Market to Market. But then we've got some comments that we're going to read that we got via the comment thing on Apple Podcasts. The comment thing? That's where the comments are left. We're going to read some
comments. Yeah. In the chat.
So we'd love to hear what people think about this. I'm just curious. I hear all these podcasts, they say, rate and review. It helps our score. I'm like, we're doing okay. People are watching us. So we appreciate those that watch us via YouTube or listen to us. So,
oh, absolutely.
Today, we've covered this topic when you were getting ready to go out and do weather. You'd already kind of done some of the weather. What are we even talking about today?
So after, well, it started in May, but my reporting from Market to Market plus doing Iowa's Wild Weather as a project just left me completely submersed in drought, which there's a joke in there if you want to pick up that.
If you want to make a joke about drought and farmers and their livelihood. John, go ahead.
Yeah,
you're fine.
Yeah, that'd be fine. So on November 24th at 7 p.m. on Iowa PBS, the premiere of a four-part series called Iowa's Wild Weather lands. It's on drought. There will be another one on flooding that comes. We've kind of pushed it back to April after talking to the state climatologist. We got to kind of see what Mother Nature's going to do. And then we're also going to have one on severe storms. But the one biggest takeaway from this is Mother Nature is the executive producer, the co-executive producer, Dave Miller. You know, you are the boss.
Who's first, though?
It depends. When my review comes up, it'll be Dave. But really, we've had to do this project waiting to see what the weather's going to do. And that's been the hardest part of doing this whole project.
Waiting on weather to rain, to stop raining, to not blow, and to be calm. I mean, I was just looking through some video yesterday from the derecho of 2020. How much of the derecho becomes part of this story?
It becomes a lot of the story. There is a quote from the state climatologist about how we see fewer severe weather because of warming temperatures, but the intensity of those storms is increasing exponentially. And case in point is an $11 billion severe storm. The costliest thunderstorm in U.S. history.
And it went across how many states? 7? 10?
Yeah. 16 hours long, 700 miles, and Iowa took 90% of the brunt.
And it was corn, soybeans, hay, trees, farmsteads, cities.
Yeah, whole cities like Cedar Rapids completely rewrote their canopy. But more importantly, you've got to think about all those smaller rural towns where rain events like these will he points to the June 30th of 2018, where metropolitan areas and rural areas received 3 to 4 inches in an hour. No infrastructure can keep up with that, especially aging infrastructure. So looking at the long-term game is what this project is doing, because there's no easy answer as weather changes for aging infrastructure, for small towns, and for rural Iowa.
Well, a podcast that will come next week discussing various economic topics. One of the things was discussed was the infrastructure bill that the president signed the week that we've recorded this. And he said a lot of the infrastructure is not really – a lot of the bill is not going to what I consider – he considers what many consider infrastructure. Kind of what you're talking about. We discussed bridges. That's what everybody thinks of. But infrastructure has changed. What do you mean by infrastructure when you say it?
In the documentary, there's a portion of it where I tell a story from Ashton, Iowa, where the USDA had awarded that very small town a grant to redo their drinking water system. And there's a quote from Secretary Vilsack, when you interviewed him, where he talks about the numerous ways that USDA helps in infrastructure, from sewer lines, drinking water, wastewater management. Rural broadband is an infrastructure. You know, it's grown exponentially.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's watch our first clip. We'll pick up with Secretary Vilsack.
Attract businesses to the community, the ability of the community to service the needs of their citizens, the ability to expand population, the ability to ensure safe drinking water. All of that is tied into our water programs.
So Vilsack also talked about, I mean, the primary reason for that conversation that day was about trade and about the wildfires in the West. An audience of the I-States always kind of struggles to hear us report constantly about the wildfires of the West. How much do the wildfires of the West matter to weather here?
They actually matter quite a bit, because it's all one system. And it's not just the wildfires, but the drought also affects invasive species. Like, you know, you've got grasshoppers and locusts that chew up whatever grazing land the drought hasn't taken care of. The grasshoppers are going to come in, and that impacts cattle. So if you've got acres and acres of grazing land in the West burning or getting eaten by locusts, then that's going to directly impact the pressures on cattle in the Midwest. So that's how we're all tied together in this.
If I really wanted to do just a clip show, I could now air part of that interview with Montana, with one of the folks we had in a previous episode here of the MTOM podcast. And that was something that I didn't realize was truly going on, was this whole locust thing. I mean, we knew about the drought, but it is getting biblical.
Yeah. 16 million acres they ate in like a week.
And it was grasshoppers, not locusts. Yeah.
Well, right? I think they're the same, aren't they?
Are they?
Uh-oh. I don't know. Great. They just called them hoppers.
Now we're going to cause comments. These guys don't even know the difference between locusts and grasshoppers. What are they doing?
It's a grasshopper, not a locust, but a locust is a grasshopper?
That could be.
Not the way around.
That could be one of those things.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I've taken you off track. Mm-hmm. Tell me where you want to go next.
Well, we can kind of keep working with the big picture. And that's something that I was just blown away by my research with this. And a big shout out to the Department of Agriculture, State of Iowa, Secretary Neg, Dr. Glisson, Keeley Kappas. They were all very helpful in helping me get submerged in this. I didn't realize how much I was going to learn, how big of a scope this is. So I spent a good hour and a half interviewing Dr. Glisson, and a lot of what he said worked its way into the documentary. And I don't know if it was by osmosis or sitting in the edit bay. I still don't have my PhD. I'm several hours short, but I did pick up a lot. Now, last week or 2 weeks ago, I went to a speaking engagement in Erlem, Earlham, Iowa, and they had probably 35, 40 people, and it was a little two-minute clip, and it was a preview of the show, and there were some awesome questions. And one question from a farmer said, well, isn't it El Nino or La Nina is predicted by typhoons? And I actually knew that answer. And so I regurgitated what Glisson had talked about, where there's this decadal oscillation, my new favorite phrase, in the South Pacific that dictates whether an El Nino or La Nina is going to move the jet stream, where it's going to move it, and that predicts if we're going to have wetter or drier conditions.
This is where we do our Elwin Taylor impersonation right now, decadal oscillation. It's a topic. Dr. Glisson was in Iowa Press, and I said to one of the reporters that day, Aaron Lee, and I said, hey, Aaron Murphy, and I said, Aaron, decadal oscillation is something that you're going to have to talk about. And sure enough, it came up. Dr. Glisson dropped the knowledge, and then Aaron was able to follow up and say, so what does that mean? And the way I always understand it from Dr. Taylor was we have decades or periods of time, long periods of time, think decades, that are abnormally dry or wet or inconsistent. There's a lot of – we might just be in one of those inconsistent patterns right now.
Yeah,
Dr. Is there any evidence to say that we are just in one of those unstable patterns?
Speaking with Dr. Glisson and going through our interview, he mentioned that. He mentioned how it's going to be – it could be more wet spring. But right now, everything is moving. But the warmer temperatures that are in the atmosphere – let me see if I can remember this formula right. But it's for every 1 degree the temperature goes up, there's 4% more moisture in the atmosphere. So that is controlling the narrative. And so you have to pay attention to those temperatures to see where things are going to line up.
All right. Paying it close to temperatures. We were warm this summer. Did any of that come up? I mean, we've been cold, and there's always this fear of it's going to be cold this winter, which is going to drive our energy need, and that's going to take more natural gas, mm-hmm. which we don't have. Where's that fit into all of this discussion?
I asked him how climate change works into it, and he said the warming temperatures are pushing the extremes like a pendulum. But now that pendulum is swinging wider and taking longer. So we'll have longer time periods of wet conditions, longer periods of dry conditions, longer periods of fewer but more severe thunderstorms. So all right. That's kind of how it's working.
John also covered that, as he mentioned, in Earlham. Let's hear a little bit of how that played out.
Basically, if we have an El Nino phase in winter, we're supposed to be warmer than average, okay? La Nina transitioning to ENSO neutral from spring into summer, we're supposed to be wetter than if the La Nina phase stuck around. El Nino and La Nina work on a 2 to 7 year cycle, but they're also built within the Southern Oscillation. So if you think of a big circle, the Southern Oscillation is multi-decadal, so a more than 10 to 20 year oscillation. El Nino, La Nina is a smaller cog that winds around that circle. It's 2 to 7 years, multi-decadal oscillations in the Pacific. And when I say oscillations, for example, the phase of El Nino or La Nina tells us where thunderstorms are going to form in the Pacific. La Nina means they form further west. Further west impacts the jet stream over the United States, hence we get different weather events. But knowing that we've had analog years in which La Nina or El Nino have been present gives us a good idea of what the behavior we can expect. So that's where our climatological outlooks come. And those are based on our weather observations, but also on longer-term trends, climatology, and again, those analog years in which the oscillation has been present.
Presentations are always a part of everything that we do here when it comes to documentaries. We go out on the road and do the road trip type thing. It's just a little different now, but you were out in Earlham, so a little bit of insight there. But whenever you go out into public, you get people bending your ear about things. And like, why is market to market this or that? They don't hear that, oh, by the way, I liked this or like that. People have comments.
The same can be said. John and I both have worked in local news. We know meteorologists, and we know that they always hear from a viewer. Same is true for a climatologist.
Yeah. And I want to back up just for a second, because you and I have done this for quite a while. We've both been in crowds. We've both done interviews. And the most, I think, the most fruitful part of an interview is right after the interview. It's when, you know, they say, hey, you know, you should really go talk to so-and-so, or you should really do this. And you kind of build this relationship and this rapport. And I spent enough time talking to Dr. Glisson and Secretary Nag that I kind of got roped into an inside joke that they have going back and forth. And Dr. Glisson gets a lot of grief when there isn't any good weather out there. And Secretary Nag threatens to not pay him if he doesn't produce good weather. Sometimes he gets paid, sometimes he doesn't. So I took it upon myself to be an advocate for Dr. Glisson. So anytime there was a nice day, I'd fire off an email. Anytime there was, you know, this fall was beautiful. Nice job on the fall colors, Justin. And he appreciated that. So we kind of went back and forth with that. And that's our next setup. And we can roll that from the interview as he explains why sometimes he's Dr. Doom, but other times his email is broken.
The funny thing is whenever there's a nice day out there, it's like my email's broken. I never get a thank you for that. But when the bad weather comes through, who's the first person they blame? It's funny. My office is in the basement of the Wallace Building, so I have to walk out of my office to see a window. But it does hone you as a meteorologist and as a climatologist to your sixth sense of what's happening outside if you're stuck in your office. And also, I have a door, so I can shut my door, which comes in handy sometimes.
You think he likes his job?
Yeah. That guy is in his element. And we talked about, you know, I absolutely love my job and what it's like to be in a job that you love. It's not a job. It's a calling. It's a passion. It's fun. But yeah, that guy really loves his job.
And he replaced Harry Hilliker, who was well known for decades in Iowa. I mean, it's a position that my kids make fun of me all the time about, well, all you do is talk about the weather and the rain. I'm like, well, you guys, you don't understand. I mean, the weather is so vital to so many.
Oh, yeah.
Let's start. It's not even agriculture. We'll start baseball. If it's raining or looks like rain, nobody's going to go to a baseball game. If it's raining, they can't have the softball game. If there's lightning, we can't go out and do those PE activities at school. If it's a snow day, well, we can't. Let's not send the buses out. Let's not have the teachers go. Then there's all of the agriculture aspects of it. And if you can't produce the grain, you can't produce the profit, you can't produce the next part of the economy. We haven't said that COVID's weather related, but I'm sure there's a way that we could. I mean, there's the cycles about being indoors and being outdoors.
Oh, yeah. You're absolutely right on all of those points. What I liked about Dr. Glisson in the interviews, he talked about how it's not just about him in Iowa. He was very humble and very cognizant of the shoes he was filling, and also how much he relies on everybody else in the Midwest. I mean, he's one of the authors of the Drought Monitor, which I cover in the documentary, and you know, he's working with climatologists all over the country, and he's working with all of those agencies. It's not just him at all. You know, Dennis Toddy from the Midwest Climate Hub, he's awesome. I didn't know that he was a climatologist in South Dakota, and Glisson credits him for getting him started, and they have their own inside jokes, but they're all nerds, and they just love what they do and helping figure out what's going to happen next with the weather until the weather changes.
The fall of 2019 has been a topic of conversation with agriculture in the sense that it started raining in September and went all through October, and we didn't hardly get a crop out. We saw tons of photos, videos of combines struggling to get through fields. That had a long tail because a lot of fall work wasn't done. That pushed us to the spring of 20 when we couldn't do – that just became a whole nother story. But it causes a ripple effect when there's flooding in the non let alone the non-regular times. I mean, June and July, we can kind of work through it and we might dry out. Rain makes grain, you know?
Yeah. When we were supposed to be going into the wettest part of the year, we ended up getting super dry, super quick. But before that, you know, like you go back to the bomb cyclone, that's a perfect example of what officials are talking about with more intense rainfalls more often. We had, I think it was third wettest year on record. Like you said, the fall, you know, it rained and rained and rained and then froze. So when those big rainstorms happen, it has nowhere to go because the ground is frozen. So then you're working into this massive flooding situation that happens like that.
And I said 19. It was 18.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was 2018. Sorry about that. Yeah, because I was thinking, no. But it's still, we almost repeated it again this year. And this fall flood, I remember when we had those two big rain events, and there was, and I would post the 3-day snapshot of where rain was at, and the folks in Minnesota were like, seriously, now we get the rain? Elaine Cubb has come down several times. We've asked her, how dry is it? It's super dry. And then she goes, and then we got some rain at harvest, and, you know, what an insult to injury.
Well, it was an insult to some, and others, it happened at just the right time. You know, I was expecting Mother Nature to write this horrible fall story, and there was just enough rain at just the right time so that and, you know, you can tie it to genetics and drought-resistant grains, but it was just enough to when I contacted the Extension Service of Iowa State just to see how harvest was going, Dr. Lick was like, you're not going to believe this, mm-hmm. but these guys are pulling huge numbers out of their combines. I mean, some soybeans, guys getting 70, mm-hmm. and when it was all but lost by the end of August, so we thought. And that's been the fun part about doing this project is just how variable it is, but also how much I get to learn and how much I get to interact with people.
All right, well, let's take a look at our third clip here, or our next clip from John's Iowa's Wild Weather, where we talk about flooding.
Well, we know that given the trends that we've had in the observational record that we're getting wetter across parts of the state, in fact, much of the state, given that temperature rise in the atmosphere, 1 degree increase in temperature gives us a 4% more water vapor holding capacity. So we talk infrastructure a lot with the dams built back last century are not built for this century, given the increase in the amount of rainfall that we're seeing. You look at the upper Midwest, anywhere over the last 126 years, 10 to 15% increase plus in the amount of rainfall, or precipitation, I should say, that's falling. And precipitation is anything liquid falling out of the air, made of water, I should say. So we, you know, I talk with city managers a lot. I talk with various groups around the state. And we, you know, we're in drought situation now where we do webinars, we're planning if X, Y, and Z happen, what can be done. What keeps me up at night are the possibilities of what the wet conditions will mean as we get into the middle of the century. I think the expectation is we're going to have more aerial flooding, we're going to have more flash flooding events, like the Ankeny June 30th event in 2018, where anywhere from 48 inches fell in 3 hours. Urban infrastructure can't keep up with that. If that type of precipitation falls over farmland, you get runoff.
One thing about that clip is when Dr. Glisson says, what keeps me up at night? Because the guy, all of them really know their stuff. And if they're worried about something, it's probably something to be worried about. But what I thought was interesting is how, I mean, he's looking to the middle of the century. He is truly playing the long game and trying to figure out where we're going to be using a lot of science. And that was a pretty impressive part of this project. Another one was, kind of goes back to my talk about relationships and it's, you know, the, hey, you should go talk to this guy, those things, because I was able to build a relationship with the Iowa Rural Water Association and Zeb McFarland, excuse me. And those guys are amazing. They really have so much knowledge and they're able to help out these small communities. But if it weren't for Zeb, then I wouldn't have found the Rock Valley Rural Water, which is interesting in itself because it just focuses on agriculture. And then it'll help other any other communities that need water. Those guys were great to work with. Going to Avoca and learning everything that it takes between a shallow well and a deep well and the problems with each, or going to surface water. They were a huge asset in telling this story, and I think people are going to learn a lot.
Where can we watch it?
Iowa PBS, Iowa PBS Online. It'll be on broadcast statewide November 24th at 7 p.m.
So if it's after November 24th when we happen to be watching or listening to this, what do I do?
You go to Iowa PBS, and there is a website with everything you need. Not only the documentary, but then you'll also be able to watch some bios about the secretary and Dr. Glisson and Deb McFarlane. And then there's other just weather tidbits. My head is so full of knowledge. I keep sending more clips to our digital immersion team going, hey, do you guys want this? Do you want this? Do you want this? And they're just like, okay, slow down, John. Slow down.
The puppy gets excited is what he's trying to say. Hey, hey, yes. I got another one. I got another one. Hey, how about this? Yeah. All right, John, thank you for the weather.
Thank you.
All right, so John, we also get comments here. And in this podcast, we have a rating out of 5. It's pretty good. I'd like to see a few more, not just because of the vanity sake of it, but just so maybe others might hear it. Eric says, I'm a wine grower from California, but I enjoy the ag focus and the highlighting of interested and talented people in our industry. So that is awesome to see, and that's kind of the goal. I mean, we've talked to lots of people.
That's cool.
It's allowed for so I guess I should show you what I want you to do is you're going to go to the podcast, and you're going to go to the bottom, when you watch it, and you can do this whole give me a 5-star review. That'd be awesome. Unless you think it's junk, then I'm sure you've already clicked away by now. But comments are kind of fun to see. But to me, John, part of this has been to tell stories that might not fit in the show but will fit in the show that are all part of it. I mean, agriculture just continues to be, and our focus in the show does kind of broaden, and there's a lot of stuff we're trying to get in.
Oh, yeah. You know, that wine grower in California, it's a perfect example of how we work, because being a national program, I've reported on the drought in the West and the wildfires in the West. But, you know, what a lot of people don't even think about is you've got this drought. So then you've got these, you know, you've got a case for wildfires. The wildfires start up. Then the smoke hits the vineyards. And now all of a sudden they go to harvest their grapes and they're tainted. The smoke taint, it's just ruined. Their entire crop is ruined. And they don't have insurance for that. And so I'm grateful that listener likes listening to the show, because that's what Market to Market does, and that's what I like to do. Like you said, the puppy gets excited. I always want to know, ooh, but what does this mean? What does that mean?
Peter Tubbs, another producer here, had just listened to – he caught up on 2 episodes. One was about trucking, and the other one was about oats. And the oats knows how many of those Twitter, Facebook comments did we see. So – figured let's find out. So Randy Stryker was great to talk about here a couple of weeks ago. Fill in with what Oates knows and how that phrase is out of date. But Oates knows it's in a pretty good position. Again, yeah. Supply and demand tied to weather. It was dry in Canada, dry in the north and northwest where we grow a lot of oats. So, and there's just a big demand for the product because people want a healthy product. And they're citing oats as a healthy product.
Well, you know, you don't see a drought has pretty much locked itself in by the time you see it. So those scientists out there that are watching this and starting to see the subsoil moisture start to deplete, and they can predict and say, hey, this is going to get bad. That's what they're thinking about. I mean, they're thinking about agriculture. They're thinking about rural communities and trying to be part of the solution. The thing about a drought is they take a long time to start. And they take even longer to get out of. I mean, the 2012 drought, it wasn't until 2014. That was 151 weeks, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, it's incredible.
See, more of the knowledge.
So we'll keep covering stories like this. And if you have any story that you would like to see, email me at paul.yeager@iowapbs.com or market to market@iowapbs.com. Or If you want to send John Torpy emails about the nice weather we're having, it's T-O-R-P-Y at iowapbs.org. Did I get that?
I will forward them on to Dr. Glisson.
Thank you so very much for watching this installment of the MTOM Show podcast. It comes to you each and every Tuesday via audio form or on the YouTube channel, depending on what you want to do. If you want to watch us, I'm not sure why. If you just want to listen to us and think that we're good looking, go with that. I mean, me. John's, of course, good looking. That's how that all works. John, thank you so much for this putting up with this crazy idea.
I like these a lot. So thank you, sir.
We'll see you next time. Thanks for watching.